Whatever comes out of these gates, we've got a better chance of survival if we work together. Do you understand?
What is your suggestion, Master Jedi?
These allegations are false.
Babble Bubble, the turn of millennium podcast that nobody asked for and, frankly, nobody may need, but I just wanted to go for it anyhow. As I discussed at the season 2 premiere that came out 2 weeks ago, this show was going to kind of be all over the place. Sometimes it would be a little more planned, as is the situation last episode, or sometimes it may be a little more free-floating, as is the case now, where I, Reed Devaney, your host, talk all things Y2K, turn of the millennium, looking at the years 1995 through 2005, with whatever happens to strike my fancy. This go-around, it is none other than an actor who has been in such roles that have influenced me and many other people my age, many millennials, young millennials, old millennials, many Gen Zers. Hell, probably baby boomers and Gen Xers as well, because that is just the power and strength that he has brought to his performances, and that is Mr. Viggo Mortensen. Now, Viggo Mortensen, many of you know, is the man who played Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. And I really want to focus a lot on that, given that the Lord of the Rings franchise came out during the period that this show covers. We're looking at 2001, 2002, and 2003. But I want to look at another one of the roles that Viggo Mortensen portrayed in this exact same time period. This actually was after Lord of the Rings, but still within this 1995 to 2005 window. And that is his role in Hidalgo, playing the historically controversial Frank Hopkins. And in this shorter episode here, I am going to make the argument that Viggo's character in Hidalgo is better than his character in Lord of the Rings. That may seem earth-shattering to a lot of people because, you know, Aragorn is the seminal role that he led. Now, I don't believe he was ever nominated for an Oscar, and that did come eventually with the movie Eastern Promises, which came out in 2007 or 2008, maybe a little later, sometime in that general time span, which is a fantastic movie in and of itself, but Eastern Promises is outside of the window we're discussing, so we're going to look exclusively here in this time frame with the ones that are meaningful. And that's not to say that Viggo's filmography in the late 90s, early 2000s, is exclusively Lord of the Rings or Hidalgo. These are just the ones that mean the most to me. I'll go ahead and read out the rest of them to y'all so you know. This is when his career is really picking up. In 1995, he was in a plethora of movies. Gimlet, Crimson Tide, The Passion of Darkly Noon, Black Velvet Pantsuit, The Prophecy. In 1996, it was Albino Alligator, Daylight, The Portrait of a Lady. In 1997, Vanishing Point, G.I. Jane, and My Brother's Gun. In 1998, he was in A Perfect Murder, and then Gus Van Sant's Psycho, the one that was a remake with Vince Vaughn of the Alfred Hitchcock classic. 1999, A Walk to the Moon. 2000, 28 Days. But his filmography, you know, we see that he's in a ton of movies in 95, and 96, 97, but it starts to slim down a little bit because he ends up doing films with incredibly long production schedules, very draining. And I think he starts to get a little more selective as well. So this is where we go. In 2001 through 2003, the only three movies he's in are the three Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, and Return of the King. Now, as anyone with any degree of familiarity with the production behind those movies well know, those were all filmed at the exact same time, you know, sequentially was the word I was digging for there. So there was that took up a tremendous amount of time in the early 2000s, rolling that all out in New Zealand. And then in 2004, the only movie he was in was Hidalgo, playing Frank Hopkins. He did close out the little time period that the Babble Bubble covers with A History of Violence by David Cronenberg in 2005. Another very critically acclaimed film in its own right. It was in the main competition for the Palme d'Or, which is the highest prize awarded at the Cannes Film Festival in France. And William Hurt was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in that play. Pardon me, that movie, not that play. Funny. Anyhow, not Vigo, though. Yeah, Vigo, like I said, it's 2007 when we get to sort of his big, you know, critical coming out party with Eastern Promises. But, you know, looking forward, you may know him from the movie The Road, On the Road, Captain Fantastic. He's truly wonderful in that Matt Ross-directed film. And he was nominated for Tony, being Tony Lip in The Green Book. So he has, yeah, those three Oscar nominations, all of them, though, after the time. But we're not going to dive into Vigo's career post-2005. We're going to look at this little window here. And like I said, specifically, the roles that he had from 2001 to 2004, Aragorn versus Frank Hopkins. Now, if this came down to who would win in a battle, because I feel like we should just open the gate with that one, you know, because that's the simplest way of comparing metrics. Who would win in a battle? So you have a cowboy who is primarily a racer, slash, you know, not just a cowboy, but, you know, a veteran of the U.S. Army in the West, taking on Aragorn, one of the leading swordsmen and a great military commander, an inspiring king in Middle-earth. Who would win in that battle? And I think, I mean, if you said as they are, Frank Hopkins would win 9 times out of 10 because he has a gun. You know, and Aragorn very much fights like a knight, so it's going to be slow moving and clungy. You know, if something like, oh, if I was saying Frank Hopkins versus Legolas, maybe, you know, sticking with like a cowboy taking on an elf from Middle-earth, I'd have to kind of give the elf some credit because they do a lot of hopping around. They're fast. Their blades are quick. They use their space in kind of a parkour way. Aragorn, by comparison, is more of a brute. Now, it's not to say he doesn't have some finesse, but I just don't think he's acting fast enough to avoid a gun, you know, being shot. And also, you know, even if the gun's out of the way, I mean, the battle definitely throws more towards Aragorn's side. But that doesn't mean Frank Hopkins isn't going to still put up a fight, because he's definitely a scrapper. You know, he kind of has that Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones type feel to him that you feel like he would do well in a fist fight. So I think, you know, what it is that you're, you know, trying to do. Similarly, you know, is it that they're being put in an arena? Or are the two of them put kind of in a battlefield? Like, if it's, here are the two of you guys put in a woods, I'd have to then start to go a little bit more to Aragorn. Less so for what we see him do in Return of the King in the Two Towers as a military leader, but more what we see in Fellowship of the Ring, you know, as a ranger. So I think he can be very silent. He can stalk Frank Thompson. He can manage to shoot him before with a bow and arrow, or stab him in the neck or something, before Frank even sees what's coming. So it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of factors trying to consider. So I'd have to go, if it's fist fight or like gladiatorial combat with their, you know, weapons of choice, I think Frank Hopkins has the victory here. But I think, you know, if it's more the two of you put out in like a Hunger Games style arena, not where, you know, everybody starts in the middle and runs out, but you're putting, let's say you're being put in two opposite sides of a woods, then I think Aragorn would have to take it. Now, Aragorn and Frank are also excellent horsemen. I mean, as we well know, the whole plot of the movie Hidalgo is about how great Frank Hopkins is with horses, specifically his own horse, Hidalgo. He's a great horse racer. And a good shot while on horseback. We get to see that multiple times. So, but, you know, Aragorn has a good relationship with horses as well. He rides them into battle. He, you know, but it's not a personality trait of his, right? It's not, here comes Aragorn, the horse guy. No, he holds his own, you know, riding alongside with the riders of Rohan, but he's not in the main charges even in that respect when you think about it. So I don't even know, you know. I would put him as far as, you know, combatants of Middle-earth in the top half for his abilities on horse. If anything, that's just more because the riders of Rohan are so good at it that that's what's keeping him out of, you know, the top third, the top 10, you know, whatever. The top half for sure. I don't know. We don't really get to see it all that often. I mean, we do know that Viggo got to know the horses he worked with in Lord of the Rings very well, that he adopted at least one of them, if not two. I can't remember the number. You get to see Aragorn's relationship with horses better looked into in The Two Towers, more so than any of the other films, in my opinion. He looks the best on horseback in Return of the King when you see, you know, the armies of Gondor and Rohan together riding up to the Black Gate to give Frodo some time. But, you know, it's hard to look at that when you're saying you're going against a movie where the other character is on a horse pretty much the entire time in Hidalgo, right? So, you know, I'm really trying to give Aragorn some credit here, but I think Frank Hopkins in Hidalgo comes in stronger there. So that's our little bit of verses, but that's not what I wanted to spend most of my time talking about today. That's just the thing that I wanted to open up with in a funny way. I want to say, you know, why I think the characters themselves, you know, what they bring together and how I think Frank Hopkins is a better character, or a more moving character at least. So I think a little bit of history has to be sort of placed there, you know, outside of the excellence of Viggo himself. So Frank Hopkins, you know, famous long distance rider who won 400 races, real life person. We're looking at the late 19th century, early 20th century. He has a bit of a complicated history, okay? So he was famous for his preservation of the American Mustang, which is very moving and important of itself. So Mustangs are specifically the free-roaming horses of the Western United States. Now, what's interesting, horses are not native to the Americas. Spanish colonizers brought them over. Numbers of them escaped and managed to make their own, you know, free, wild, roving herds. And anyhow, it was very common to just round them up, and if you couldn't immediately domesticate them, because remember, the colonization of the West, or I should say Western expansion, Manifest Destiny, thinking in the United States, you know, it pointed to that if you can't make immediate use of it, as is what we're used to in the age of industrialization, you have to get rid of it. So it was very frequent that you saw the rounding up and mass execution of Mustangs, similar to the mass execution of native peoples. I'm not trying to, you know, put them exactly on a comparison. Naturally, you know, the genocide of Native Americans that lasted from the early colonial period up through the 20th century is one of the greatest stains on our country's history, if not one of the greatest stains in the history of the world, mind you. But just showing that there's a similar tactic going on there. But anyhow, Frank T. Hopkins was very famous for his, you know, belief that Mustang communities need to be preserved and fully enjoying the land as they always had when they became free. Like I said, they're not native. So the land they always had, we're talking about the land they had from the 18th century onward. Now, where it gets, you know, controversial with him is that a lot of people think, and when I say people, I mean, you know, historians and experts, that Frank Hopkins is a bit of a con artist. So he claimed to be the son of a Lakota Native American and just a Caucasian white father. And he had all these grand stories about his childhood. Not quite at Davy Crockett level lore, but stuff up in that degree, you know, that, oh, you know, his father was a scout for General Custer, and he was captured by a chief in the Battle of Little Bighorn, which saw most of Custer's men executed, but somehow, you know, Hopkins' dad got it out and later returned to a fort where that's where Frank was raised, while also learning how to speak Lakota and raised in Lakota culture. Very grandiose stuff. But, you know, even though this is the 19th century we're talking about, the U.S. military is notorious for keeping good records. You can very easily verify if somebody had served for someone for who and when and where, and there's no proof of that. So that's kind of the earliest bit of evidence that Frank is a liar in that regard. It's also important to note that when you go to the Fort Laramie National Historic Site that has the list of everybody who's been there in any sort of capacity, there is no sign of Hopkins at all. He claims that's the fort where he was born, and there are records of people being born at that fort, him not included. So it's a bit tricky there. So this also is a belief that he may be 20 years younger than he claimed to be, granted that there seems to be evidence of his birth in New York State. So, anyhow, just that's a straight and forward thing at the just kind of the beginning of his lies. Now, some of the claims that he have made that have been debunked, and even ones I just stated, the whole that he won more than 400 races, that just kind of feels ridiculous because there weren't necessarily that many races out there to win. And you would expect there to be more contemporaneous coverage. Hopkins, when he wrote his memoirs about his life, you know, more past tense, like, oh, this did happen, not this is actively happening. So even if it is autobiographical, that doesn't necessarily constitute it as being true. You need something to back it up. He claimed to have raced in some ceremonial 3,000-mile ride that passed the Gulf of Syria and the inland borders of two other Middle Eastern countries, which was supposed to have taken place in Arabia in 1890. Now, this is the race that the movie Hidalgo is based on. There is no such evidence of that particular race. So I just want to highlight that. You know, Hidalgo, oh, this is inspired by a true story, I think is the language they use, not even based on a true story. This race itself is probably fictitious. And that's not a knock on the movie. They're just wanting to tell a good story. I mean, the story of Middle Earth is not true, and it's a good story. You know, it's something completely fabricated, so I think we are allowed to enjoy the tall tales of Frank Hopkins the same way we are allowed to enjoy Tolkien's Middle Earth. Just something to say. The other lie here that the movie pushes out is that he was a rider with Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. Now, once again, even though we're talking about the 19th century here, just as the U.S. Army kept good records, the circuses at the time kept really good records as well. So the Buffalo Bill Historical Center has names of everybody who had worked on the Buffalo Bill show. It's located in Cody, Wyoming. Can't say I've ever been, but I hope to go. I love the Western aesthetic, being a Texan myself. So the curator of that center disputes that claim, as there's no evidence of Hopkins' name in the archives. It is shown that he did work for Ringling Brothers Circus as a horse handler. Now, there's a keen difference between horse handler and horse rider. If you're a rider, in this sense, you're performing in the show. If you're the handler, you're just kind of traveling around and feeding them and caring for the horses. Still very, very important, especially when you consider, you know, the poor treatment that animals generally received. You know, for all of the lies that Frank Hopkins has said or had said in his life, it is very evident you can believe the man loved horses. So hopefully, at least for the time, you can think that the horses in Ringling Brothers Circus were taken care of compared to other people. And so, and you know, going back, sticking with that whole claim there, he said that he was, you know, a trick rider in Buffalo Bill's Wild West show, and there were people who specialized in what trick writing constituted, and some of the tricks that he was claiming to do were not yet achieved by anybody else in the world at the time he claimed to do it. So that would have garnered, once again, more primary source coverage in that time. So just want to lay that all out there. That's some problems with Frank Hopkins. And naturally, being a product of his time, when he's talking about his escapade that likely did not happen in Arabia, he does not necessarily paint Arabs in a particularly flattering light, we'll go to say. So, you know, once again, there's that to consider. I just wanted to get that off my chest. So with that said, we will compare Aragorn in Lord of the Rings to Frank Hopkins in Hidalgo as two fantasy characters, because effectively, the life that Frank has painted is a fantasy that exists within the real world, and the movie has real world events that are shaping everything, such as the ending Mustang conservation. I mean, maybe not to the fullest degree, or the massacre at Wounded Knee at the opening, but that everything happening in the middle slash for the majority of the film is in and of itself a stretch. So there we go. I'm going to break this down to what are the things about a character that mean a lot to me. And I'm not trying to belittle anyone who thinks that Aragorn is a better character than Frank Hopkins. I would say 95% of people familiar with both movies, or movie franchise in one case and movie in the other, would think that Aragorn is a better character, because people love Aragorn. He's great. One thing I have often said is that Aragorn in the movies is better than Aragorn in the books. That what Viggo Mortensen does to that character is better than what Tolkien wrote for him. And that's rare. You know, I'm not someone who isn't necessarily a book purist by any stretch. I try my best to enjoy every medium in their own way. But I really think that, you know, Aragorn in the books is kind of a prick. I mean, he is honorable in everything, but he's a little self-absorbed, where Viggo Mortensen makes him far more selfless and brings a lot of emotion into it, because he's such a, his facial acting is so good. He can tell so much stories, so many strong stories with his eyes, especially, you know, when you look at his later films. I highly recommend Captain Fantastic, which was his second Oscar nomination, is very moving. It's about a father potentially losing his children, and incredibly moving. I'd think important in a timeless way, so I can't recommend that enough. But you can see, you know, the character in that film and see how that character lives in Aragorn. That's not how Tolkien wrote Aragorn to be, but I prefer it that way, in my opinion. You know, Aragorn is noble. Aragorn is not compassionate in the books. Viggo Mortensen makes him compassionate. And I don't know, there could be some Tolkien heads out there who feel like, how dare you? Aragorn is a compassionate king of Gondor, and he's a compassionate ranger, and he's kind to Frodo, and, well, the movies just made him a pussyfoot. Made him like a little cat. Like, I don't know the complaints. I've never seen these complaints about it. I know people instinctually don't like anything that says a movie made someone better than they were in the books, but I'm just getting that out there. Movie Aragorn is great. That being said, like I've been saying this whole time, Frank Hopkins from Hidalgo is better. Number one, we're talking compassion and kindness. Now, Aragorn is very kind to Frodo. He's very kind to the other hobbits. You can tell that he feels a tremendous sadness when he thinks anybody in the fellowship is gone. And he has such a strong belief in the strength of the little guy that is inspiring, that makes you believe in yourself, because, you know, none of us listening to this today are very few of us listening to this today, at least. You know, we're not knights in shining armor. We're not the super strong, brave warrior. We are definitely closer to the hobbits than we are to the rangers. And to hear one of them talk to the hobbits in the way that Aragorn does, not just like I'm looking out after you, but I want to raise you up among you. And then at the very end, when he says, "My friends, you bow to no one, that I am less than you." And the whole, he leads the whole kingdom of Gondor and all the elves and men present at his coronation, bowing at the four hobbits. That is incredible. That is just a certain degree of humility that will never not floor me. It'll bring me to tears every single time I watch it. This is probably the category that I think he excels the most in when comparing him to Frank. Frank, however, still does an excellent job with this, because he has a sprinkling that Aragorn does not, and that is guilt. Yes, I will grant you, Aragorn feels guilty for the crimes of his family, right? For the failing of his ancestors, but not necessarily the crimes and failings of himself. He feels the fault for others, not the fault of his own actions. Which, once again, you know, that could be painted as a positive, that, oh, well, that just goes to show how Aragorn is such an esteemed guy that, you know, he feels the weight of things he's not directly responsible for. That's, you know, that's a positive. That shows that he is assuming responsibility for something he doesn't need to, because that's how selfless he is. And like I say, that's wonderful. Frank Hopkins feels responsibility for something he did that was bad, that was also relatively out of his control. So this is when he delivers the message to the U.S. forces in the West to massacre all of the Native American women and children who are effectively prisoners of the U.S. government. And how that drives him into alcoholism and tomfoolery and having to be basically near a literal clown in Buffalo Bill's circus. And that weighs on him because he feels like he is responsible for the assassination, the execution, the annihilation, the decimation of his own culture. You know, someone who's claiming to be half Lakotan, to see the execution of his own people, that he feels like their blood is on his hand, and that weighs on him the entire film. That is a direct thing that is causing grief, not an abstract that, oh, my ancestor Isildur kept the Ring of Power rather than destroying it and oversaw, you know, the eventual slow downfall of the men of Numenor, and we see in the kingdoms of Gondor and Arnor and yada yada. You know, you have to keep reading more to see it. You know, like, Aragorn's grief becomes more evident if you read the books, or if you dig around the Lord of the Rings Wikipedia and you really get to know the full family history, and it's great and very moving. And Mr. J.R.R. Tolkien, I salute you for that excellent job of stringing things together. But Frank Hopkins, you see his grief and you know exactly what causes it in that film. The entirety of the film, beginning to end, it's there. And then when at the very end he releases the horses, he recognizes that releasing the wild Mustangs, you know, that doesn't cleanse him of his perceived sins. However, it's a step in that direction. It relieves him that, hey, you know, I did something right. It's a very bittersweet moment. And he even lets his own horse, Hidalgo, go run off and join the other Mustangs as well. And so that is something that is an incredibly moving moment. But there's no happy pat myself on the back. I did it. I have washed my hands. I'm clean. This is, I will never get over the guilt and shame for the role I played in something so horrible. But please, God, the universe, the spirits, the ancestors, whatever supernatural forces I choose to believe in, please accept my humble attempt at taking small steps to make amends for it. Plus, you just add in the, you know, the James Newton Howard score on top of that scene, and that is, woo, it's a tearjerker. I exclusively, that track is called Letter Buck, and I exclusively save that for when I'm in a moment of feeling sad and I feel like I need to cry. I'll openly admit I'm not the world's best crier. There's a lot of times I internalize a lot of my own feelings, so I have to turn to music to help me get to that stage where I need to tear up a bit, where I need to sob. Music or films, and so that particular track, the one that's the closing track of the Hidalgo soundtrack, I keep in my back pocket to use. I'll never listen to it when I'm happy because I don't want to ruin it for me. Unless, you know, I'll go and watch the movie when I'm in a happy mood to see the movie, but I'll never listen to the score right there. You know, one thing, once more, comparing the characters, is how, you know, Frank spends the whole time not just defending that Mustangs should be free in their habitat, but the idea that here are Mustangs, they are the literal little guy. You're looking at, when he makes it to the grand race, Arabian racehorses. And I mean it not just that they are from Arabia, but that that's a legitimate breed of horse, Arabians. Arabians are famous as being some of the just most ideal horses ever bred for size, strength, endurance. It's sort of the be-all horse. If you had to picture what horse does a god ride, you would picture an Arabian. Unless, of course, you live in Kentucky, at which point you would picture a thoroughbred. There we go. There's a horse racing joke for everybody. So there, ta-da. But anyhow, you know, Frank comes in with this little bitty Mustang, and you see the shot where there he is with the little bitty Mustang against all these Arabians, and he looks tiny, but he believes in him. That's very similar to when you're seeing at the Council of Elrond in Fellowship of the Ring. You see, here are these great warriors from the kingdoms of men, the kingdoms of the elves, the kingdoms of the dwarves, and here's a little hobbit there. And Aragorn sees the strength in the hobbit. He sees the strength in the little guy. And Viggo displays that. You want to follow him because he wants to follow you. It is a symbiotic relationship. It's incredibly meaningful. Now, I do want to put a qualifier on all of this, that I do not condone the practice of horse racing. I think that it is a dated sport, and I think a lot of it is very barbaric. I'm lucky that as a Texan, I have a close relationship with horses. My mother owns a horse that I think is just a truly wonderful creature. A little fellow by the name of Howdy. I say little. He's little for a horse. He's not a pony or a miniature horse, but he's just, you know, just on the smaller side. Very special creatures, horses. And I think horse races, you know, the physical toll that does. I mean, people look at the fancy lives that, you know, the Triple Crown winners get to lead, such as, you know, American Pharaoh. Or Justified, for instance, but, you know, a lot of them in the lesser tracks, and even at the big tracks, too, get beaten down a lot, and, you know, their lives are ended prematurely because, you know, they break something because they were put under strain. Their bodies should not have been put under. Or, you know, somebody bought a bunch of the horses. They did not perform in the race as expected, so they get shipped down to the glue factory. I mean, as dated as that reference sound, it's still true, you know. So it's all very sad. So, and I don't mean to romanticize, you know, Frank Hopkins as a horse racer or horse racing in general. I think that thanks to technology and stuff we have, if you want to watch races, there's plenty of other racing options to see, namely something with a moving vehicle, you know, motocross racing, NASCAR, F1, IndyCar, endurance racing, like the 24 hours at Le Mans, you know, any number of options out there. I don't think we should be racing with live animals. The same goes for dogs as well, and for greyhounds. There's some wonderful greyhound rescue organizations around the United States, and you know, if you live elsewhere around the globe, I'm not terribly familiar with the practice outside the U.S. I do want to applaud the state of Florida for making greyhound racing illegal back in 2018. I really hope my home state here of Texas does the same thing. You know, unfortunately, when greyhound racing in Florida went by the wayside, a lot of it came over here to Texas because we already had the infrastructure for it. So there's plenty of little greyhounds and whippets and Italian greyhounds out there that are needing homes. So please look into your local organization if you want to take on a little friend. It's funny, in this episode that's about an actor, I didn't think I was going to give so much time to dogs, but especially when I was talking about his roles with horses. But yes, dogs and horses alike. You know, I came into this recording very strongly thinking that Frank Hopkins was the character who I preferred the most, but I feel like I've made some compelling arguments for Aragorn, and more importantly, compelling conversation that they're both excellent in their own right, and they're both very similar in a lot of ways. They're inseparable. They're the same. It's like Hidalgo is almost a sequel to Lord of the Rings. It's a stretch, but just stick with it. And it's nice that they all came in subsequent years, that, you know, between 2001 and 2004, you could go to a movie theater, see a movie starring Viggo Mortensen, and get a character that is heartfelt, strong, inspiring, and just all around someone you want to be a friend with. With a little dash of humor. I will say, yes, Hidalgo has more humorous moments than Lord of the Rings that make, I'd say, give Frank the final edge. I like to laugh. Anyone who listens to this show or has listened to me on other stuff know that I like to laugh, oftentimes at myself when I make a mistake. Sometimes I tell a joke, laugh at what other people say. So anything that has little spatterings of humorous moments, I salute that. And I also just want to say, I do not think that Hidalgo is a better movie than Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is an excellent trilogy. Return of the King is objectively one of the best movies of all times, at least if you want to look at the metric of awards won. So, I'm not trying to convince that, but I think a lot of people do skip over Hidalgo when they're just looking at what movies from the early 2000s to watch. But if you like Aragorn, or if you're someone who's plugged into Viggo's career later on, such as Captain Fantastic, or The Green Book, or Eastern Promises, go back and watch Hidalgo if you haven't. I think it's a nice movie that's lodged in the middle there. And for all I know, you guys can think it's awful, and Frank Hopkins is a horrible character, and that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. I'm never going to tell anybody that they're wrong about what they feel for a certain character. So with that being said, thank you for joining me for this little bit of conversation. I want to draw attention to the artwork that we have this week on the Babble Bubble social media pages and sort of the album artwork, so to say. This is it's really cute, actually. So it's a drawing of Aragorn and Frank Hopkins, each with their own horses, drawn by the Cascading Thief. You can find Samantha, the Cascading Thief, on her Etsy store, who can draw characters in this Animal Crossing style art here for you and other places around sort of the artistic commission scene. So I love this because, one, I loved the original Animal Crossing game that came out in 2001. I may dive into that in this show, given that that video game lines up with the timeline in question. And two, you know, I like seeing that here they are both as friends, Aragorn and Frank. So all that business at the beginning of who would win as a fight, I'd like to say in the long and short of it, they would end up being friendly with each other and with their respective little horses. So check it out. Give it a like. You can follow the Babble Bubble on social media, at Twitter, check out at Y2KBubble. And on Instagram, you can look up the Babble Bubble, where you can find this pictures as well as any of the other artwork that's being released across the second season and some of the other fun stuff and musings that came out in tandem with the first season. If you have not already subscribed, please do. You can find this podcast on whatever podcast platform you're currently listening to, or if you want to switch, it's available on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else as well that hits those little niche markets. So please enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed this show. Thank you so much for giving me your time, lending me your ears. Also, one more thing to plug, check out the One and Done Film Club. That's another show I'm on with Nikki Kumar of the Imperial Senate Podcast and Alden Diaz of Octo Radio. It is a tremendous amount of fun. We pick one movie from a franchise and we watch it with an ongoing commentary. So the most recent episode released, I guess it would have been Saturday, February 20th, is Mission Impossible. So see which Mission Impossible film we watch. Listen along to it. Listen to the debate as we each pitch the one we think is the best or the one we most want to watch at that moment. Then we dive into it. So check it out. That is the One and Done Film Club, available where all podcasts are provided. And per usual, my friends, I will catch you all around the corner.